Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. As the host of a live radio show, I do know a thing or two about improvisation. When a guest doesn't show up or we have technical difficulties, the show doesn't stop. You've heard me. I mean, you may not like my brand of improvisation, but I do step up to the plate. Usually we try to avoid this at all costs, however. And sometimes when we least expect it, the show turns out better for the improvisation. Who would ever imagine that? I can't imagine. I'll tell you how many times I've walked out of the studio going, oh, no, and people come up to me and say, oh, yeah. In theater, however, improv actors choose to get on a stage without a script or characters or even a plot and literally make a show on the spot out of nothing but their wits. Joining us now to discuss the art of improv is Barbara Allen of Columbus Unscripted, where she performs and teaches. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you, Ann.
Also with us is Bill Sabo. He is an improv performer and teacher and co-founder of Columbus Unscripted. Welcome.
Thank you.
They are both the co-directors of the second annual Columbus Unscripted Improv Festival, which starts today. For more info, go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. We'll be talking more about the festival and about improv in general in Columbus coming up later in the show. But first of all, Bill, for those unsure of, well, let's start with something else. For those of who are unsure of what improv is, one example is the television show Whose Line Is It Anyway, hosted by Drew Carey. In this clip from the show, the performers are playing a game where they can only speak in questions. The setting is on the Titanic.
Oh. Are you the king of the world? Will you be my queen? Can you save me? Can you swim? Can it help me? Do you have difficulty speaking? Don't you know English is not my first language?
Okay. So anyways, Bill, can you tell us a bit about what we mean by improv? Maybe somebody doesn't know it.
From my perspective, improv is making stuff up. It's that simple. Trying to get on stage with nothing in your head and starting somewhere and stopping for just a millisecond to see what you've created, and having a strong choice and going with what you created and giving it content and context and then making something out of it. It's a process rather than a product.
And you practice doing this, something that you'll never do again?
Right, that sounds crazy.
Yes,
you practice improv?
It does.
Okay.
Yes. Practicing for us, and I'm going to speak for See You Thursday, is more a process of bonding and getting to know each other and getting to know how to play on the stage with each other. And that's not to say getting to, you know, predict,
right,
but getting comfortable in a person's voice and getting comfortable in how they're going to improvise with you. That way you can create a myriad of characters and situations and scenes and slices of life is what basically an improv scene is. It's a slice of life. Something happened before. Something's going to happen after, and you get to see this one little snippet. That's why we practice, to get to know each other, to bond, and to be fluid on stage.
I think it creates ensemble. For me, it's about knowing people well, so you're kind of in touch with them on a different frequency. You kind of don't know exactly what they're going to do, but you are sort of, there's sort of like a bat signal in the air, and you can kind of tune into it together because you know each other and you trust each other. So trust is really important.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about improvisation this hour with Bill Sabo, co-founder and co-director of the second annual Columbus Unscripted Improv Festival, and also Barbara Allen, a teacher and co-director of the second annual Columbus Unscripted Improv Festival. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. So when you work together as an ensemble, you get to know each other. You can learn to anticipate sort of what they're going to come back with. Do you ever have inside jokes going on up on the stage where you know why they've come up with that, but the audience may not? It may still be funny for the audience or fun to watch.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we try to do, at least in See You Thursday, is to meet before the show, not plan a show, certainly not, but just sort of check in with each other and see what's been going on for the week. Sometimes we do a warm-up or a one-line intentionally unfunny summary of your week, and then you'll see some of those themes come in, but they'll be heightened and explored. And so we kind of know, we're kind of laughing about maybe something we talked about earlier, but... Right, it's still unscripted.
Yeah, or if you know something generally about someone in their life,
yeah,
and
yeah,
that comes up, that's yeah, definitely a you know
can
fair game.
Yeah,
for playing, yeah, for playing. That's what happens in play.
Yeah, it's all play.
Well, there's an improv game. It's called the Alphabet Game, and we were talking about it earlier. But maybe Barbara, you can describe what.
Okay.
What the game is before we start playing it.
So what we will do, if we accept the challenge, is we will pick a letter of the alphabet. Maybe we should ask our person over here to pick a letter of the alphabet.
An unbiased person,
yes.
Amy.
Any letter of the alphabet.
R.
R. Ooh,
great.
R. That's a level of difficulty. So we'll start with R. And should we make Anne go first? Do you want to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay. So Anne will begin her sentence with the letter R. And if we won't boo her or anything if she does it wrong. Don't worry. It's supportive. And then we'll go to S, T, and we'll go all around the alphabet back to R. So we have to begin the sentence with the letter of the alphabet.
Can we
next.
Do it in the context of an interview?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Reasonable people think that maybe... doing something like this doesn't have really much of a purpose. Barbara?
Talk to me about reasonable people. They're wrong. It definitely... Now, see, I forgot the question. And I forgot. I got
reasonable
so excited.
People would say this doesn't have much of a purpose.
And you started with a T.
No, oh, my gosh, and I blew it. I have failed at improv.
You blew
improv.
This game.
And okay. I was already on to you saying you and I was going to be doing
you guys were pre-planning.
Okay. Fail in improv.
Start over.
So can I start over?
Yes.
Reasonable people would wonder, what is the purpose of improvisation?
Some would say it's just an art form. That's simple enough.
To put it simply, they haven't done it, so they need to get on stage and give it a try.
Under what circumstances did you start improvisation, Bill?
Very pressured circumstances. I was pressured into getting a career that paid a salary.
Yes.
And so it took me till this age to really get my expressive needs met.
What are you talking about? Why wouldn't you try improv? It's actually a very safe environment for everybody just to be playful. Kids are playful. They actually, we've done a show just recently in Findlay with a bunch of high school students and never perform with, animals and children because, boy, they were just terrific. They just played, had fun, and had no apprehension, no nervousness. They were terrific.
X-rays often are used to see through people. How often do you think the audience sees through and sees what you're doing?
You can count on being seen through. If you try to put out a joke or be scripted or be animated in a false way, they see right through you.
Zip, Zap, Zop is a really good game to start out with that relaxes people. It's an energy boosting game to start out with in warm-ups. there you go.
A zip, zap, zop game. Can you describe that?
Before each show, we do a warm-up, and zip, zap, zop is simply an eye contact, and you start with zip and a little clap and a point, and then the other person does zap, and then the third person does zop, and you continue around the circle until you get tired of doing zip, zap, zop.
Continually passing the energy in this game. That's the point of it.
Do you ever begin a show maybe with not as much energy as you would like?
Friday nights, our shows are Friday, so absolutely.
Yeah, Thursday's my last.
right. So Friday, absolutely. Yeah.
Every show, I'll do the E because...
Did I skip it?
Yeah, you skipped
the E. I don't know the alphabet. This is embarrassing for me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to know your alphabet in improv.
I'm trying to figure out what I said. I interrupted.
No, you did fine.
You were doing
Barbara.
Okay. Yeah, it's me, I believe.
Barbara.
I'm out of the improv troupe.
You're out of the improv troupe. You can't... If you can't make a mistake, you can't be. So every show, we do that.
Friday.
Whatever that was that we were doing, we do it.
Okay, folks, we're playing a game. It's called the Alphabet Game. We have other games that I want to play, so we'll give that one up. But can you tell us a little bit about the history of improvisation as an art form? Where did it come from? Mm-hmm.
16th century Commedia dell'arte.
Yeah.
That's really kind of
really?
Where it all started. Really, yes. The Italian comedy. In the 16th century, troops were formed, and they did a lot of political humor and a lot of, you know, daily life, making fun of things, making fun of life, used a lot of masks. You probably have seen the mask. Think of Punch and Judy. Mm-hmm. That came out of the Commedia dell'arte. Spread to France and to England and grew from there in Europe. And then some of the English and European comedians and actors came to the United States and started things like vaudeville.
Mm-hmm.
They started things in the early 1900s. Stan Laurel is one of my favorite comedians. Came with Fred Carno's English Music Hall. A lot of improv with Stan Laurel. He was a writer, but he also did a lot of improv. Came over with Charlie Chaplin.
Mm.
Those are the ways it started. As a performance art, Viola Spolin was a social worker with the WPA at the Hull House in Chicago. And she took some of these things from vaudeville and from the comedians that came over, the improv, turned it into games to use at the Hull House.
I love that.
Oh, yeah. So it really hasn't changed much even in how it's practiced.
Not really. It's changed in how it's used in some ways. But the way it's practiced, it's pretty much the comedy that we see now.
Mm-hmm. Was there some sort of modern resurgence of this at some point, Barbara?
I mean, really, the beginning of the Second City, 1950 or 60?
It was in the 50s.
I mean,
sure.
Chicago.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If you think back to, really, a lot of artists have their roots, a lot of comedians have their roots in improv. You know, it started back with, like, Alan Alda, mm-hmm. with Joan mm-hmm. Rivers, mm-hmm. Mike Nichols were all involved at the Second City, and a lot of theaters grew out of that, like the Improv Olympic, which is in Chicago, a theater that we're very associated with, the Annoyance Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of adaptations, but still sort of that foundation of agreeing and starting from nothing and creating. So
sometimes you fail.
Oh,
absolutely.
I did.
How do you define a failure? How do you know when one's occurred?
Well,
you feel it.
Yeah.
You feel it inside. And you know what? It's okay to fail. And I guess it's a failure in the moment,
mm-hmm.
but you're not a failure because you failed.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty stock statement.
No, I cling to it every day.
Yeah, you have to. Yes, you have to.
Well, in teaching, when Bill and I teach, people are very nervous at first, mm-hmm. and they come for a variety of reasons. But a lot of people want to do a performance, and so they won't even at first get started in the class because they're afraid they're going to fail. I'm like, so I try to lower the stakes. You know, we're just here in a classroom. I'm barely watching. Mm-hmm. Just get up on stage. A personal story, I had a failure sort of in a public setting, and I thought, well, this is my last day in improv. But it really wasn't. It helps you grow and see there's another side.
Is improv usually done with a troupe? Is it ever done just alone?
It's called a monologue.
Okay. No, I think there's some
folks
that...
Yeah, there are people who do one-person shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it does become... Actually, there's something going on at Catco, Fully Committed.
Uh-huh.
Is a one-person show. It's an entire play. Yeah. It takes place in a restaurant, and I'm not sure of the total details, but it's coming up. And it's scripted, but a lot of it is improvised. Mm-hmm. When you're all mm-hmm. by yourself, mm-hmm. when your guest doesn't show up and you're by yourself,
or sometimes
you're
when
doing
they do
a
show
one-person improv
still by
show. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And that's when you just start to call on your impulses and, you know, your life and experiences that you've had, and you go.
But sometimes a perceived failure on stage can lead to a whole nother line of the scene. I mean, you might have started in one place, and the failure happens, and you're a whole other distant universe. And those are fun. Those are really fun when you do that.
We have to take a quick break, but before we do, I want to ask you this question: is improvisation all about ending up laughing? Or can it make you cry, too?
Absolutely.
Jonathan Fox from New York does a training program. It's called Playback Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Playback Theater is a an opportunity for a person from the audience to come up and tell a story. There's a director who kind of puts the story together, and there are four actors who improvise that story. It can be funny. It can be therapeutic. But it is drama. There's improv in drama therapy. Drama therapy is a field that, you know, takes role-playing improv to a role-playing level. Yeah, so the answer is yes. There's more than just comedy.
Right. I think it's the authentic connection between the players in the scene. So if they're playing it authentic with themselves, it may be funny. It may develop slowly into funny, but it's not necessarily this, like, I'm winking at the audience, trying to make a laugh, trying to make a joke. There are lots of forms of improv, and that's certainly part of it, like with the comedy sports and the Whose Line Is It? But there's lots of different ways to approach.
Making that joke can sometimes be counterproductive.
Yeah.
We are talking about improvisation today. My guests, Barbara Allen and Bill Sabo, are co-founders and co-directors of the second annual Columbus Unscripted Improv Festival this weekend, starting tonight, actually. For more information, go to WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll continue the conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We've been talking about the act and the art of improvisation. Many are familiar with the idea of musicians or actors improvising, but we all have to wing it from time to time in our everyday lives, especially at work. And I'm not talking about my situation. Joining us now by phone from L.A. to talk about that is Bob Colhan. He teaches at Duke University's, can you pronounce the name of the School of Business, Bob?
Sure, The Fuqua School of Business.
Okay, the Fuqua School of Business, and is CEO of Business Improvisations. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me. It's nice to meet you, and it's nice to hear Barbara and Bill chat an awful lot.
Yep, they're right here, ready to jump in at a moment's notice.
Hi.
Yeah, Barbara and Bill, we have a lot of mutual friends. I was jumping through your website yesterday.
Oh, good.
Great to see some great faces like Megan Grano's.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they were saying the same thing before we went on the air, actually, Bob, about you.
Yeah, I'm a Chicago improviser, so
fantastic.
By trade, spent 15 years bouncing between the Second City and IO and Annoyance, so those are all very much my home.
Well, before we move into the business school end of this, is there a Chicago style, an L.A. style, an Austin style? I don't know where the big, a Columbus style. Bob, can you tell us?
I can speak much more to New York, Chicago, and L.A. than Columbus, so I'll need some help with that one. yes, there's a big difference. And the way that I would try to encapsulate it quickly would be Chicago really focuses on the art of improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
To be a great improviser is something that's very important to people who study improv in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
New York is kind of the bridge between Chicago and L.A., where L.A. is mostly industry. You're doing a lot of showcases out here, and it's the opportunity to take the craft of improvisation and really funnel it toward script writing or performance to get in movies or television. And New York, as I mentioned, is that bridge. It has a bit of the art and a bit of the industry, more industry than Chicago and less art than Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And people are focusing on using it really as a way to create comedy. And I'm speaking specifically through like the UCB or Upright Citizens Brigade Training Center, where they're really focusing on using improvisation to create comedy more than an overdriving way to create art.
What about Columbus?
Yes. No. All of that. well, I think... Bill and join in, is that we're trying to create professional connections, certainly to Chicago. That's important for us to have that link, to have relationships with teachers and professional improvisers to help us keep continuing to develop our craft. So art and play are really important. But I think, as we were telling Anne earlier, there are about 22 teams in Columbus that are coming up and really surging and really creating all different kinds of improv. There's improv wars going on. There's a really strong presence at Ohio State University. So lots of people are putting their hand out there and showing their love of the art and taking it lots of different ways. We are bringing Michael Clayton McCarthy, who Bob probably knows, who is going to bridge that for us and teach some comedy writing this weekend.
Yeah.
So, Bob.
Yeah, I'm very, very friendly, familiar with and friendly with him and Susan Messing. I was at their wonderful wedding, and they're both good friends of mine.
So, Bob, what are the virtues of improv that you teach to business students? I would imagine not necessarily the artiest group, the most fun-loving group.
Well, no, that's true. And business students really have a drive to use this improvisation. It has to be practical, and they love using words like return on investment.
Which comes up in improv a lot.
Yes.
It does. So it can be some things related to creativity and innovation, some things related to teamwork, some things related to communication. Really, though, the roots of improvisation are based out of reacting and adapting and communicating. Mm-hmm. So once you lay those foundational blocks, you can take improvisation anywhere.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Joining us right now, Bob Colhan. He teaches at Duke University, and he teaches improvisation. He's also CEO of Business Improvisations. I've read a lot about what you do, and a lot about what you do has to do with the yes and principle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yes and's the cornerstone of all improvisation around the world. Yes is unconditional acceptance. You, Anne, gave me an apple. I have an apple. I can't judge it based on what it is. I can't judge it based on who gave it to me. I can't judge it based on any supposed subtext based on what I think you mean by giving me this. An apple is an apple. Anne means you take that idea, that object, and build directly upon it. The connotation to building directly upon it, though, in the business world is actually dangerous. That people think that it's always complimentary or it's always brainstorming. And that turns into a very destructive thing for people who are trying to use improvisation outside of a creative environment. Mm-hmm. Building directly upon it's fantastic for brainstorming, fantastic for creation on stage, and creativity as a whole. However, really the and part of yes and turns into the articulation of individual perspective. So the building directly upon it can actually come from different directions. It can come from a completely converse angle from that which it started. So yes, and more than a creativity tool, it turns into a communication tool.
What does it mean to create an improvisational workplace? How big of a deal is that these days?
That's an enormous deal. It's absolutely enormous. People are looking for creativity. People are looking for the entrepreneurial spirit. And when I say the entrepreneurial spirit, I mean that you can teach that. It also has to be intrinsically motivated. People who are entrepreneurial have a drive. They have a fire in their belly, and they are willing to work endless hours at no pay, similar to really what an improviser.
Oh, there's a commonality. Here
we're
it
doing
is.
That now.
But aren't you glad you're not an improviser? You can say to your students, and but you can use, you can steal from them.
That's right.
Yes, and them.
We love what we do. You know, being up on stage and perform improvisation, to be in a classroom teaching improvisation, giving this gift to other people. It is a, you know, I was trained under Del Close, the person who created long-form improvisation. And Del would say, this is a drug. This is the best drug. And it's absolutely correct. It's very, very, very addictive. And it creates that intrinsic motivation. And if you can actually take the tenets of what we do comedically in improvisational comedy or improvisational acting, to go back to what you said before, that it can certainly be dramatic, and create work environments in which people want to be there and want to thrive, it's absolutely tremendous. And it's really taking human capital and using it at a very high level.
In your work teaching, say, at Duke, have you ever gotten anybody hooked on it?
Yes.
Business students hooked on improv.
Yeah, Duke,
the next Dan Fisher.
Duke business students hooked on improv. It's an oxy, kind of a weird sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm fortunate that I not only am an adjunct professor at the Duke Buca School of Business, I'm also an adjunct professor at Columbia Business School, and I'm out here in L.A. teaching at UCLA Business School.
Okay.
And the short answer is yes. From all three of these really great business schools, people have decided to leave their potential careers at Goldman Sachs, you know, a guaranteed $1 million future, and study improv.
That's what I wondered.
And also, it really, though, goes back to the individual. If this is a calling for somebody, then you have to follow your heart. You have to follow that which you believe in and that which makes you smile and makes your heart sing. If not, then, you know, we're wasting one of the biggest actual resources in the entire world, which is time. And you cannot, it's diminishing. There's no way to get that back. If you're not happy with what you're doing, then I would say find something that makes you happy, or at least find something that will make you happier.
So now when you're at the schools, you're teaching students. Do you do much teaching in the professional world with these hardcore, you know, executives, these CEOs and people that they don't want to give it up? You know, they've got a lot of power and improvisation, or this kind of a concept probably isn't the way they grew up in business.
Oh, absolutely. I'm in businesses all the time, creating improvisational cultures, doing workshops that last anywhere from a half a day to a full day to a day and a half to 2 days to 3 days to 1 week to once a week for 18 weeks in a row. And it's incredibly hard. I deal with pushback on a regular basis. My clients are, touch wood, but I've been very fortunate to work with very great clients and very high-ranking individuals who really have no problem telling you how much they make an hour and how much time they feel is wasted if they're not happy.
Well, thank you. All right.
This is absolutely something that's happened to me before. It's my, you know, in my very early teaching career to business people, and I'm now speaking around 2000, the year 2000, somebody said that this was a waste of time, and it became a drive for me to make sure that it's not a waste of time and make sure that everyone understands why we love this thing so much and how they can use it in a practical way in the business world. So now I get to go into, I've worked with admirals, I've worked with generals, I've worked with tons of CEOs, tons of VPs, tons of boards, and all very, very impressive. I mean, you know, admirals and generals are impressive by nature. and they have to be able to use this when it's done. You know, like I said, return on investment means something to them. And if I can't articulate why this is useful and how to use it and get them to understand that, then I fail. And frankly, I would do a disservice to the art of improvisation if I failed, and I will not fail for anyone.
I would imagine that there are also people, when you go out to businesses and organizations to do this, that I feel so validated, they probably break down and start crying sometimes. Because that's what their personality lends. That's where one of their gifts is, and it's been shut down for so long.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Keith Johnstone wrote a great book called Impro. And in the book Impro, there's a chapter on spontaneity, which talks about how children are naturally improvisational, naturally spontaneous. Yeah. They can go out in the backyard and, you know, turn a stick into 10 different things and not even think twice about it. And then over time, we are taught not to behave this way, or there's a time and a place to behave specific ways. And for some people, it really does open up that childlike spirit again. And for others, and Bill, you mentioned this before in relation to dramatic improvisation, for others, it becomes very cathartic.
Yes.
And it's a great work-life thing that I've been part of dozens and dozens of conversations in which adult men are crying because they're playing with their children for the first time, they feel like. And again, these are no joke as far as, you know, whatever status means in life, individuals, they're high ranking individuals who have realized they've been either ignoring or not really communicating with their prodigies, their lineage, their children.
Yeah, it's very healing.
Yeah. You have a 10 ways to create an improvisational workplace. It isn't just the yes and component. One thing is about it is you say to be explicit with your intent.
Oh, absolutely. Now we're now bridging over to how to create this environment.
Yeah.
Leaders have to communicate. Have to communicate early, have to communicate often, and have to communicate clearly and have to be consistent in their communication. And that sometimes means being vulnerable and being very clear with what you want. So saying why are you doing this, yes and, for example. Why are we going to use yes and? How are we going to use yes and? How long are we going to use yes and? To what end are we going to use yes and? What questions do you have using yes and? What can we do about those questions? And now let's do it. And if the team around them, people that, you know, that they're lower status of, you know, the leader, his team, their team, if her team doesn't understand what the goal is with everything, then it's a great opportunity to create less buy-in. And if there's less buy-in, then there's less trust and support. And in any improv team, you need trust and support.
What I think is interesting about saying yes, I use it a lot in some of the work that Bill and I do in here in Columbus with different nonprofit organizations. Yes is the willingness to change. I tell people saying yes in a situation doesn't mean you're going to change, but at least you're willing. And I think that probably translates a lot for you, Bob, in business is that, you know, people already want to say no or we've tried that before. But yes is just a conversation. It's being willing to change when someone, you know, give them the time to speak and being open. Really, improv is being open and saying yes is being open to what could happen.
Absolutely. Without question, yes does not necessarily mean that you agree. Yes does not necessarily mean that you do it. Yes is listening to what's being said, being open to the possibility of discovery.
Right. And contribution. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
You said provide a mutually shared experience is another one. So I'm just telling everybody on the staff, we're going to have a party. But that is important to do things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. You can read about improvisation. In truth, though, nothing beats the experience of learning improvisation, not only in a classroom, also up on a stage. Well, the experience is a great teacher, and if you go through that together, you create a bond.
Well, the funny thing is, I know when we're teaching, sometimes you play some of these games, and they're really you're just improvising in their low stakes situations, and people get really emotional, and you want to say, well, think about it when you're back in business. I mean, you're upset about an improv game right now. You're worrying about did you win? Did you listen? When it really matters, what are you going to do? I mean, guys, it's pretend right now. Like, chill out. People get really emotional. They're like, I won that round. Yeah. Okay, again, pretend.
I was wondering, Bob, if you don't come across that element, that super competitive, I want to show the boss how smart I am so I won't get lost in the alphabet game.
Right, like I did.
Yeah. Well, as was mentioned before, failure is part of so much of life. You know, so there's a lot of insecurity that's attached to that type of aggression. The people being so competitive, you have to be willing to manipulate status. You cannot always be high status; you have to be low status sometimes, and you have to be willing to fail. I mean, if you're going to succeed at a high level, you have to learn how to fail. And if you're really so focused on being competitive, what that is a very self-centered thing to focus on. You're really not focusing on the ensemble, not on the team, the other members of the team, members of the team that need your support. And in a great improvisation team, the individuals inside of it really put the team at a higher level than any person. I mean, so much so, it always goes back to an old improv adage, which is we sacrifice our own ideas to make the ideas of other people succeed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm part of a great improvisation thing called Baby Wants Candy. We do improvised musicals. I'm a founding member of that group, and there's no greater example of that than this group for me personally, because it's constantly supporting what somebody else is doing at the risk of losing your own thing. And in doing so, it really gets you to that next level. It's transcendent, because it's never about you. It's about this whole thing that we're all doing together.
Bob Colhan, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. And have a great time at your festival, Barbara.
Thanks, Bob.
I wish I could be there.
Come next year, Bob.
Next year.
We'll be in touch.
Bob Colhan, he's a teacher at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. Yay. And is CEO of Business Improvisations. Coming up, we're going to continue our conversation about improvisation with a performer and teacher from Chicago who's going to join us on the phone. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This hour, we've been discussing improvisation and improvisational theater. The second annual Columbus Unscripted Improv Festival begins today and runs through Sunday and will include performance and improv workshops. Still with us are the co-directors of the festival, Barbara Allen and Bill Sabo. If you want to learn more about that, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. There's a link there for you. Joining us now by phone from Chicago is Megan Johns. She is a veteran improviser and will be performing and teaching at the festival. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
We were talking earlier about the improv scene in Chicago. It's sort of a ground zero for this art form in the United States.
It is. Chicago is this crazy, wonderful mecca for people.
Yay.
And they really travel from all over the place to come here and study. So it's really cool to be in a community that's so rich and so full of, you know, all types of experience levels and opportunities. It's really fun.
You're going to be teaching a workshop called Emotional Environment. Describe what that means, what'll happen.
Sure. So the emotional environment, to me, basically means reaching out from your own self as your character and into the world around you. Actually, environment and object work is something that some improvisers kind of roll their eyes at, because it sort of seems like one of those things that we're just told we have to learn and become good at. Mm-hmm. And if you really break it down, it's like you're already on stage creating things that don't exist. So then object work feels like, oh man, now I've got to pretend to be holding things and using things that don't exist. You know, it can feel very kind of hokey and forced sometimes, but I really want people to shift their perspective on it, because I think it can be looked at a little bit differently. It can be attached more to your own choices on stage, your character's choices. So it's not just, oh, I'm reaching out into thin air and grabbing a cup from a cabinet. It's that, you know, how does my character feel right now? Am I upset? Am I, you know, excited about something? And with that energy, what do I see in the world around me? So it's about seeing the environment from a more inspired place.
When you do a workshop like this, how many people are in it? How is it structured?
You know what? I really left that open to the festival, Bill and to Barbara, because I've taught very small numbers of people and I've taught very large numbers of people. So I think I always prepare for like about 15 people. Mm-hmm. That seems to be no matter where you are.
That seems like a good number.
Yeah. Yes. It's full.
And I have
15.
No reason why I think that sounds good. But Barbara, what are you shooting for in the festival when it comes to these workshops?
Oh, we are just thrilled. Megan, we're thrilled you're coming. So
hi, Megan.
See you soon.
Hi, guys.
Hi. We're just really, again, trying to provide some space and some really professional opportunities for people to connect and have a chance to grow their craft, to really experience some of these focused workshops and just explore and extend their talent. So have some time to just focus on their development.
Yeah, we have them at 15 right now. Mm-hmm. That's about the cap.
Yeah.
It's comfortable at that
Absolutely.
Level.
So you get some time on stage and some coaching.
Yes.
Megan, you'll also be performing your show, Wise Snatch. If it is an improvised show, is Wise Snatch a show or an improv troupe or both? Or is there a theme? How does that work?
It's a great show.
Yes.
I got to tell you, it makes me so happy just to hear you say our name.
Wise Snatch. Okay.
Improv names are so, you know, random and ridiculous lots of times.
They
it's
are.
Like, you know, you could pick an adjective and pick a noun and there's your improv group's mm-hmm. name. So this group is three women, myself being one of them, who we've been performing in Chicago together for about 3 years, Joe Scott and Rachel Farmer and myself. So we perform in Chicago, and we're very good friends as well, which is not always a necessary ingredient for shows, but for us it's worked because mm-hmm. we're a smaller group and we're pretty much on stage the whole time, always moving. Just the three of us are in it the whole time together. But Joe Scott is not going to be with us for this, so it'll just be Rachel and myself. And Joe Scott would be here, but she's at the New York Television Film Festival right now. So she's off doing something else incredible and amazing. And Rachel and I have done two-person shows together here in Chicago for the Chicago Improv Festival. And so we are super excited about it. I would say, you know, a joy of being able to perform with just two other people is that you know each other very well on stage and off. Mm-hmm. And for the kind of improv that we try to do, we move really fast. We get really intense. We get very emotional with each other. So basically, it boils down to we have to absolutely trust each other because we're going to do some pretty crazy things on stage together. So I'm excited because you never know what's going to happen.
You said the kind of improv that we try to do. Is there a word for the kind of improv you do?
Oh God!
Like in the biz,
I can think of it.
Is there a word? You know what I mean?
I would say yes, I do. I would say that we do more of a free form because mm-hmm. in lots of improvised shows, there's a form, meaning a structure to how the scenes are done, and perhaps that is helped by lighting cues or. You know, editing in between scenes can be done a very specific way. We choose to just kind of throw it all into the pot at once, meaning a scene transition can come from inside of the scene. So if I, you know, just change my physicality and look up and say something different, it can be a new scene. So we're not the only people that do that type of work. There are other improv groups that do that too. But, you know, sometimes you'll see shows at, you know, like See You Thursday, this Columbus group that Bill and Barbara are in, they do this great form where the lights go down and go up in between each scene. So that's something that you can see on stage. Sometimes people do a very specific format that pulls one character, mm-hmm. you know, through several scenes. So I say, especially in Chicago, people can create their own format mm-hmm. and just run with it. You never know what you're going
to
get.
We have an email from Rick. He writes, I travel the country portraying General George Armstrong Custer in speaking engagements and reenactments, and I began using prepared notes, but now I become the general and am strictly improv. It seemed to come naturally and works well. Our reenactment battles are also improv with a beginning and an end, but no middle. It's fun.
Wow.
Great.
So
yeah.
I would imagine it is more fun and less stressful to be sticking with a script, but there's a certain kind of stress associated with improv, isn't there, Megan?
Yes.
I mean, just because you don't have a script.
It's great. It's I think it's great to constantly have to face that stress, and I think that that stress can sometimes be bundled up into nerves as well. So something that I always try to teach is for people to just start making choices and just start doing rather than thinking about doing. Because we could spend so long, you know, wondering, what am I going to do? What is the right choice going to be? How should I come out on stage? And then not only that, but, you know, berating ourselves lots of times for, oh, that's a stupid idea. This is going to be terrible and not funny. So what I found is that if we just, you know, power through that, that nerve and through that stress and really just jump out into a scene and begin somewhere, that we're going to be better off no matter what it is that we begin with.
And you had that great workshop. Oh, I was going to say you had that great exercise you did the last time you were here about taking initiations, just starting with different initiations and not even thinking about them, just finding where you were and starting.
What do you mean by that?
Megan, do you want to explain the initiation workshop?
Sure.
It's so cool.
Yes. Thank you. I love that. Because
that was so great.
I think it sounds so scary.
It is scary.
But it's actually...
But it's awesome.
I think it's awesome. So it just asks people to do solo initiations, meaning you would be the only person on stage, and you would, upon my cue from the side of saying switch, every time I say switch, you would just begin a new scene. And and all of that can be boiled down into just making a choice. So it can be a physical choice, an emotional choice, or a verbal choice, but to each time literally reset and start over as if the curtain's going down and going up really quickly, as a way to just get you moving and get out of that paralysis that our nerves can provide for us, because we all know how easy it is to get caught in that waiting game, whether you're on stage or in real life. I think it's a really good exercise for us as improvisers and just
in
life,
general,
for us to remember, if we wait and sit and wait and sit, sometimes we'll never actually begin something. And beginning anywhere is the best way to really get your hands in there and figure out where you're at and assess it.
I find that on stage, you tend to feel like sometimes your left brain just fell out and you think you need to rely on that left brain to guide you and make things logical and put things in order. And if you just kind of let that left brain lay on the stage and just go with your right brain, you're much better off because you really don't need that left brain, I think, on the stage.
Let's talk a little bit about the festival. We only have a couple minutes left, and I want to know about the festival. It says, the question here I have is, how the festival has grown since the first one in 2011. This is 2013. Did you skip a year?
We did.
Okay, good, good. So I didn't lose count. So how has it grown since 2011?
In 2011, we had maybe five troupes. Six that were local, and now we have 15. Performing.
Plus people from Cleveland.
People from Cleveland. Kansas City. And, of course, Megan and Susan and Michael Clayton McCarthy coming from Chicago.
A group called Pancakes on Sunday.
Pancakes on Sunday.
Babblefish.
Babblefish from Kansas. And the Stevens family from Chicago.
The Stevens family, that sounds often, is that actually what they are? I don't know
anymore. They're a wild card. So that's a Sunday night wild card.
Yeah, I think Duck Dynasty. I think
that was kind of their description. A group from Cleveland is doing a show called This Improvised Life, so it should be a storytelling. So we're thrilled. We cannot wait to start this thing.
And, okay, so people are coming from all over. Are people coming from all over to attend the festival, too?
Actually, we have, I know of one person who's coming from Georgia, from Atlanta, the Atlanta area, to do workshops and watch shows.
Oh, cool.
Megan, do you travel around and do these kind of things a lot?
I do when I'm lucky enough to get invited to awesome festivals like this.
No, it's our pleasure. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really a thrill to get to go. Like, people are like, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, oh, I get to travel to Columbus, Ohio and perform and teach with a bunch of people that may not even know me yet but have trusted me to come, you know, explore and share stuff with them. So I do travel around when I can. You know, I've been to New York. They always do improv festivals. And L.A., of course, has festivals. But I also love going to places like Columbus because you've got such a rich community. And as you can hear, it's growing,
well,
you know,
Megan,
in size in the years they've done it.
Megan, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about it.
Thank you. Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Megan Johns, she's from Chicago, where she teaches improv and performs improvisational. Also with us, Barbara Allen and Bill Sabo, co-founders and co-directors of the second annual Columbus Unscripted Improv Festival. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.